This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Welcome, everybody, to another special bonus fill-in episode in between Sparky and I saving the world. Last time, you got to hear me talk to Rafer Roberts. So my next guest, of course, has to try to show him up with me tonight is Alex Cosa. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, close enough.
All right. I didn't have it in front of me, so I totally choked on what it was. But so we've been chatting online for a while. I know you write for a comics website, but tell us kind of your chops. What have you done?
Yeah, so I host a podcast called Those Two Geeks with my buddy Joe, and that's hosted or published, I guess, over at graphicpolicy.com. It's also where I write. I do a lot of the Valiant reviews over there. I used to do a lot of the DC kind of how accessible are DC comics to new readers, which was great for a time as I hadn't really read much DC. So I was the perfect guinea pig to see, is Rebirth really as accessible as we want it to be? Turns out it pretty much was.
Nice.
Very, yeah.
So I kind of did the same thing with, I don't know if you listen to other Nerdy Legion podcasts, but obviously I'm assuming we started talking because you were listening to VCP. I honestly don't remember when we started talking because we've been talking long enough now. But I started Rebirthically with Aaron and Ronnie because everybody that did a podcast about something was a fan and trying to sell it. And I said, like, I wasn't a big DC fan. They claimed they weren't big DC fans. Liars. So we were just like, let's do this podcast, just reading it from the perspective of people reading it. And we did that for a while, and then I didn't have time to maintain the podcast I was doing, so I left it to them, and then they turned it into a legitimate DC podcast and ruined it. So now it's called Absolute DC Podcast.
Yeah, the feature I did, I think it was called Rebirth Recap and Review or something. We changed it recently because there's only so much DC you can read and still remain unfamiliar to it. But I liked the idea of presenting something for people that weren't familiar with the franchise, with the series, publisher, whatever. So we've changed it now. So it just covers it. Most first issues, depending on what I have time to read. Some weeks it's only four comics covered, and some weeks there's a bit more. It depends on the time that I have to go through them. When we started the DC thing, I think I had read every single Rebirth comic for the best part of 8 months before I finally realized that, you know, I just don't like some of these. And it's not because they're bad comics. It's just not what I'm just not enjoying reading them. Like, I can recognize they're still good, and I understand why people would enjoy them. They're just not for me. So I kind of slowly dropped them off, and the more I was dropping off, the more I thought, well, all I'm doing is the same eight comics every couple of weeks. So we switched that up a bit. But yeah, I think you're right. It was around, I don't know, a couple of years now. I'm trying to think when I got into Valley, and funnily enough, because of Graphic Policy, he'd sent some review copies around, and it was Exo Manowar 38 that just, the cover just happened to catch my eye, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I'll try that.
Awesome.
And I found you guys after that somehow. I don't know how I found it. I was probably searching iTunes and one day, and you were the top result.
That's hilarious. It still kind of blows my mind, impact or visibility that we had doing the Valiant Central podcast. So we just started doing it. We were listening to the Valiant podcast that the guys at the Taylor Network podcast was doing. Mike Myers, Daryl Taylor, and Chris Campbell were doing it. So we both listened to that. We stumbled into each other, like, oddly enough, because of fantasy football. And I ended up starting to try to write for Martin was doing the Valiant Central website at the time, and it was just like a place to collect Valiant news, basically. And we talked about doing a podcast because it's something we both wanted to try, and then the rest is history. Now, VCP's dead, Valiant Central's a long dead website, and we're a podcast network with like a dozen podcasts or something like that. It's crazy how stuff goes.
It's the evolution, right? Like, things that start off, like me and my buddy Joe, we started off writing about Scott Snyder's Batman run, and we would do articles back and forth until one day we thought, why don't we just talk about it? Because it's probably going to be much easier. And, I mean, we started off, we were terrible. Absolutely terrible. And we didn't realize how terrible we were until he recently went back and listened. He had the time to go back and listen to some earlier episodes, I guess. And he's like, dude, we are so bad. I don't know how anyone ever put up with us, but we've always said we hang out, we chat for an hour. Maybe we can edit it into a half decent podcast. Maybe it can be a bit longer and we'll go from there. Like, if no one listens to us, we're still having fun, right? And that's the main thing. As long as you're having fun doing what you're doing, then.
Exactly. That's what eventually brought about the end of VCP was we just didn't have the even though we both still liked Valiant Comics, we didn't have the passion that we had before. So getting on there every week to talk about it was getting hard, especially because we didn't do like other podcasts do and review the issues that just came out. We were just getting on there talking about Valiant in general. And, I mean, 3 years of episodes without reviewing issues, that was a lot of content to do, so we made the right choice. We moved on. I mean, Martin's doing several other podcasts, and since we moved on, he's doing Comic Talk Today. That's been super successful. And I've stumbled around a little bit trying to figure out what I wanted to do. But this has worked out with hooking up with Sparky, because he started doing a podcast with his cousins that they actually get together in person to do it, which is pretty cool. And he enjoyed it, and I told him if you ever want to do another one, let me know. And we've worked it out. It's always a little hard for both of us with our family dynamics to find time to regularly record with somebody. The good thing for both of us is we can record rather sporadically and make it work out pretty well. So since we've gotten it rolling, I decided to kill the other stuff I was doing because I wasn't enjoying doing a solo podcast. And I've just been playing around with different stuff, and I've kind of stumbled into I stumbled into doing the interview with Rafer last week. I'm supposed to be doing an interview with another comic artist next week. And then I just was talking to you and hit you up one day and said, why don't we get on and talk about comics some?
Yeah.
So,
I haven't actually listened to your interview with Rafer yet. I've got it on my download queue. We actually had Rafer on as well, probably around the same time as you. To talk about Grumble. Did you? I assume you read that.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Grumble. I read that and I picked up the first two issues, I should say, of Modern Fantasy. And that book was fine, but it wasn't my cup of tea. I played a role playing game once to try it, but that wasn't my world, you know? But Grumble, yeah. I loved. And I love Mike Norton. I've been reading, his books for quite a while. The first one was Revival, and I started reading that not long after it had started. So it's been a while. And that wasn't long after I started reading comics, because, I've only been reading comics for like 6 or 7 years consistently now.
Yeah, I remember hearing you saying you only recently got into, and recently being a relative term, and probably was a couple of years ago, hearing you say you recently got into comics, but... Yeah, no, Grumble is absolutely fantastic. I'm a big fan. And it kills me that the next issue is not out for at least another 3 months.
Yeah, it's the part that burns about getting that early preview of the first issue. Yeah,
I backed a Kickstarter once last year, the year before, for Voracious. It's a comic about a time-traveling chef that makes dinosaur sandwiches.
And yeah, you've told me about that one, yeah.
I absolutely love it, man. And so I got the first issue because of the Kickstarter, and I got that nice and early, and I was really happy with it. And then I realized I have to wait an almost unbearable amount of time to read the next issue because the first issue is still about a month or two maybe away from coming out. It's brutal.
So one comic I want to talk about before we get into whatever other topics we decide to stumble onto. I told you about this, so you checked it out. It's called Border Town. It's being published by Vertigo. It's written by Eric M. Esquivel. The art is by Ramon Villalobos, and the colors are by Tamara Bonvillain. So I discovered this book just because, actually, the one comic podcast that I've been listening to lately that I listened to for a while, we're getting into fantasy football. See, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I don't have a lot of, like, driving time. And I don't get to listen at work or anything like some people do. So when fantasy football time starts, I tend to be listening to my ESPN Fantasy Focus Football podcast, which is the first podcast I ever listened to. I've been listening longer than anything else. But so this comic book podcast, War Rocket Ajax, whenever they're having a guest, they'll tweet out and say, "We're going to talk to so-and-so." Questions, you know, ask for questions on Twitter. So I Googled the guy, Ramon, and saw his artwork and just loved it. Just loved his artwork. If you Google his name, you'll see the same thing that I saw. I think the fourth image that showed up is a really kind of badass Raphael that he did. And I'm a huge Ninja Turtle fan, so that caught my attention. Then he also did like some superheroes as wrestlers art, but it's like in a very like all of his art has a very kind of Hispanic feel to it. You know, like, I mean, you read Border Town. You know, a lot of it has that kind of, I mean, right on the cover, one of the characters has, like, a luchador mask on, you know. They have the chupacabra in it. So, like, a lot of it has that aspect to it. I just loved his art. So I listened to the episode, and he was freaking hilarious. Absolutely loved listening to him. So he sold me on it. Like, it didn't even matter what it was about. I was going to check it out just because I enjoyed him so much. But then when I checked out what it was about, I was like, okay, well, this sounds like it's going to appeal to me anyways. There's definitely some, social aspects of this with, bigotry and, different stuff like that. Like, I mean, this first issue, one of the main characters meets, he moves to a new town. He meets a kid that he thinks is just a nice guy at the high school, you know? A little bit later, he finds out that he's like a white power kid. And that's where he says, "I'm not a Nazi, I'm half Mexican." And then that kid finds out he's half Mexican and then wants to fight him because he was tricked into being friendly to, somebody who's not just white. So, there's those kind of aspects to it, but then there's also these, there's these chupacabras running around, but then I just love how they show it all. Like, I'm flipping through it right now and it's showing how the chupacabra is seen by whoever sees him as being their greatest fear. And then it shows a Batman fan see the chupacabra as Bane. That cracked me up.
I had forgotten it was a Vertigo comic, and when I was reading it, I'd forgotten that Vertigo was owned by DC. So in my mind, I don't know why I thought it was from Image, but I just was reading through it, went in completely utterly blind. So when I saw that, I'm like, that's gotta be some kind of copyright, and then I wised up a bit. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it's got probably one of the best opening lines I've read in a comic in a long time. And it sets the scene really well for what's to come, both in terms of the social aspect and also the Chupacabra part as well, which was, I think the more I thought about the opening line as I was reading it, the better I realized it was as your continuing to go further down the rabbit hole with the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this definitely sets the weight of an aspect of what's being dealt with here right off the bat with all these racist bastards at the border getting ready to flaunt their muscle against any people possibly trying to cross the border. Then you get this crazy ass monster that just shows up and starts killing people. And you know there's got to be more that gets tied back to this opening scene, right? At least I assume that this is more than just kind of a throwaway scene. Obviously, you see the Chupacabra more. And then I love at the end where it adds another twist to it. It's like you have this very fantastical element to this book, too. That it's going to be interesting as it goes on to see how everything ties together and how it plays out. One of the things I loved, I noticed something that I actually didn't notice before. I'm assuming you read a digital copy, so this won't help you. But like right in the middle of the issue, like right on the spine, like you open it up to where the staples are coming through, and there's a panel on the right, and it's right after the Bane panels, the page to the right of the Bane panel, and it's this this like mystical boutique. And it has the Sandman's mask chilling right there up on the shelf. I just noticed that. I didn't notice it the first time I read it.
I also didn't notice that, and now I'm trying to pull up the copy I read. So my laptop is probably about nearly 10 years old. So whenever I'm recording, I shut everything down but Skype and the recorder. So I'm trying to pull it up on my phone as we're going, and it just
I'll just send you a picture on your phone. This will be quicker. Yeah.
You're probably right. It will be. My only concern with the comic is that there's going to be too much going on at once as it progresses. I see what you mean. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I realize that's a complete and utter divergent, but yes, I just with all of the elements to it, I'm worried that parts of it can get lost, which would do the story injustice. I just hope they don't rush through it. I hope they're given the time to explore what they need to give or what they have to explore without it being unduly cancelled or shortened up or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like just seeing the response on Twitter, it seems like this has been doing well, so.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully they get as much play as they want with it to be able to spread out and do the story right. I absolutely love this though. I mean, I haven't been this really impressed by reading a comic for the first time, especially something I just went into blind like this. Yeah, I really love Ramon's art. Tamara's colors are great, absolutely great for it. She's definitely a colorist that now I'll look around and see her on other stuff and be like, oh yeah, that's why I like that. She's really good at what she does. And Eric, I haven't looked up yet to see what else he's done, but I'll definitely look around and see what else he's worked on and check out his other books, because this is just a good book.
It is, and it's one I think that doesn't need, but it deserves a bigger audience, I think, than it's likely to get, because I find a lot of people aren't that willing to give indie a chance. Not even indie, but the lesser known properties a chance. In comparison to the latest issue of Batman or something like that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this does with it being on Vertigo. I don't really know as a whole how the new Vertigo line is doing. This is the first thing I've read from it. I've been hearing talk about different stuff. Then of course now they have all the Sandman universe books starting to come out, so that definitely can't hurt. I haven't read any of those yet. I want to check them out, but I mean, I'm a big Sandman fan, so I don't know if the stuff not written by Neil Gaiman, if it'll be a response for me of just like, this is Neil Gaiman, or if it'll be good, good continuation of what was laid forth by Gaiman.
Yeah, I've never read Sandman beyond the first trade.
my comic shop owner was saying the same thing. He said he's read the first trade 3 or 4 times and just can't get past it. I said, well, you should just start it with the second one.
It's not even that. It's just I don't own them. And when I went to look for it. So there's a bit of a background. I grew up in England, as you may or may not be able to tell. And I moved to the east coast of Canada probably about 13, 14 years ago. So a lot of the trades that I had, and I was just starting to get into some of the other Vertigo series, Swamp Thing, Sandman, Preacher, things like that, I didn't bring with me. So after kind of settling for a bit and thinking, I want to get more comics, I knew what I was getting in England with my shop. I'd come to an agreement with them and they're actually still holding it for me, so I was only going to come over here for a year, and that changed. But so I didn't want to get what I was getting in England, so I found a few other things, which is when I found Batman and the like, and I couldn't remember what trade I was on for the series I was reading, because I'm pretty sure the trade dress was different. And I didn't remember at the time what the numbering or the issue was called, or the name of the trade. It was just the front cover, and couldn't find the front cover of where I was. And it was really kind of before the internet had any, I mean, 2004, 2005, it was still relatively, I don't want to say young as the internet, but there wasn't the databases built that there are now.
Yeah, now you can find anything.
Right? Now, I mean, now you could probably Google Preacher UK European trade dress and you'd find it a lot quicker than me trying to remember. So, long story short, I never really got back into it, and I realized I didn't really miss the first trade. Now, were I to read it again today, nearly, 15 years after first reading it, maybe 16 years, I'd probably have a different reaction. I just never really got into it. I can probably find it in Comixology if I really cared, or used in the comic shop. I just never really got there.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too that not everything is going to be for everybody. Like, there's plenty of books that are great books, of the scope of touching the legendary, which is what I would think Sandman would be at. Like Watchmen's another one that people revere very highly. Watchmen's actually I'll back up a little bit. So the first comic I ever read actually was when I think I was still in high school or just out of high school, and I was a Kevin Smith fan for a surprisingly short amount of time looking back on it. But I got really, really into Kevin Smith, and he was just starting to write Green Arrow. It was him and Phil Hester, and the covers that Phil Hester did for that was beautiful. So I started getting that, like, right at the beginning. And that was the first comic I ever read, was Green Arrow number one from that run of Green Arrow. And I continued on with that. I got the Daredevil stuff that Kevin Smith did, and then it didn't take long, and I got burnt out on Kevin Smith because, it doesn't take that long to get burnt out on Kevin Smith. I mean, just his movie. I just overindulged in his movies, his writing. I got like every Kevin Smith comic I could get my hands on. So I got burnt out, and I wasn't a big comic fan or anything. I mean, that was the first comics I read. So that was actually, I made my eBay account for the first time to sell the Kevin Smith comics I had bought. I just sold them all as a lot, lost a bunch of money on them probably. I'll never forget, though. I will never forget how great it was to stop by the comic shop each week that Green Arrow came out, to pick up Green Arrow, and then when I started getting the Daredevil comics he did and looking for the back issues, like, actually happened to hope they got them in at the shop and, like, looking around and, like, oh, look, you got Daredevil number, I think it had, like, a zero issue, and they had it up on the wall, Like, that was a great feeling. You don't really get that anymore, because if you want something, you just go find it online. Not the same feeling.
I've actually been trying to build a collection of certain runs of and certain comics that I've been wanting for various reasons. And because I've been trying to recapture that feeling of going into a comic shop and finding it in person, I haven't used eBay. Unless, caveat to that, unless I found the comic in, a condition that wasn't good enough, or it was graded and I wanted to be able to read it and I wasn't going to pay $80 for a graded comic when I'm going to crack the slab, at that point I'd go and buy it on eBay, but only after I'd actually found a physical copy will I consider then getting it online.
That's an interesting approach.
Really
to it.
Difficult to, like, it makes it really difficult to find some of the comics. I mean, I as a Valiant fan and relatively new, I never read them in the 90s. So I've been trying to build a VH1 collection, primarily of Atona Warrior, because favorite character. And I was in the basement of a comic shop that, I mean, you're in New England, you know, Northeast basements aren't always, if they're older, they tend to be musty and clay or stone and what have you. And so I was in the basement of this comic shop, the owner let me down there and he's kind of hanging out with me. It was late at night. And I was just rifling through the boxes. And I found Atona Warrior 4 and I was like, huh, quietly picked it up, put it down. And I had a bunch of them and he's like, these are probably all a buck a comic. I'm like, not really answering him, but not really not answering him because I didn't want to be the guy that's like, yeah, dollar a comic. Yeah. So $20 for the lot. Yeah. So he was looking them up and he's like, this is worth more than I thought it was. Like, yeah, I'm not surprised. It's, you know, and I told him what it was and he's like, do I have any more down there? I'm like, nope. No, you don't. That was your one copy and I've got it and you probably would have paid, you know, been able to sell it for more had you had it up on the upstairs and whatever. But yeah, it was pretty cool finding that. Unfortunately, so early in my search, like I've only got a couple issues left now that I need. But I'll find them eventually. I'm in no real rush. I forgot what we were talking about.
It doesn't matter. That's the best way to find stuff too. I started building a VH1 collection early enough that I didn't get burned by all of the prices jumping up on stuff because of the movie news and whatever. Because I started reading Valiant within a year of the relaunch, and there were only so many titles coming out. I was just like, I want more of this. It was, you know, the predominant thing I was reading at that time. I was able to get a little bit more comics than I can these days. Right now I get hardly anything each month, but I was getting all the Valiant books and just wanted more, but they weren't, you know, there wasn't going to be more. I had to wait till the next month. So I started getting VH1 books because I would go into my comic shop. This is the first one that I went to down in Portland. And they had quarter bins, and if you bought five, they were only 20 cents, five for a dollar. And he had a ton of old Valiant in there, so I dug and dug and dug. I think I spent between a couple of occasions $80 on 20 cent a book VH1 comics. So that's a lot of comics that I got for almost nothing.
I mean, I was going to do the math on that and then realize it really doesn't matter. That's it.
80 might be a little high, but at least like 60. I 80 is probably high, probably like 60, but that's 300 comics. Like, I probably put together 300 of the 600 and some odd VH1 books for 20 cents an issue. So then once I cleared all those out, I was like, do you have any more? And he says, I got some long boxes down in the basement. You know, I'll bring them up when you want to look at them. So then I go in there another time, he brings them up. He's like, these are just a buck an issue. And then, like, however many you get, I'll knock a little bit off. So I was like, I was just paying 20 cents an issue, now I got to pay a buck an issue. But I went through, I ended up getting a whole bunch more that way. And he had some in there that were worth a lot more than a buck, but this was still before everything skyrocketed. So I know I missed out on a couple of things that I should have picked up because not that long after that, there was a big storm and his basement flooded and all those comics got destroyed. So whatever I bought, I at least saved, and that was money in his pocket he wouldn't have had because they all got destroyed.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah, there's a local shop around here. They're in a basement. And I don't know for sure. Rumor has it they had a minor flood or a pipe burst and it took out a bunch of stock. I did go down shortly thereafter, and there was work being done on one of the rentable spaces up above, and all of a sudden, like a leak sprung through, missed most of the books, but it splashed on enough of them that he had to. He felt he couldn't sell them, and he could have in a dollar bin, but I think he was able to get the money for through insurance or something. But yeah, I couldn't imagine a basement flooding full of comics. It would be so devastating, especially to. I mean, I get if the comics down there, you don't think they're going to sell. They're just kind of taking up space, etc. But even still, man, that would be rough. Like, it'd be heartbreaking for those like us that would just love to just enjoy diving and going through the boxes. And Lord knows how many key issues, hidden gems were down there that end up in a landfill or wherever they end up.
Yeah, especially the stuff that, you know, like the Valiant stuff that people just don't know about. I ended up, so like, that's how I got started on the collection. I put most of it together and I got some of the pricier key issues before they skyrocketed. So I didn't pay a huge amount for anything. I think I was annoyed when I'd have to pay like 10 or 12 bucks for a few issues. And then jump forward a couple of comic shops, but they the one that I go to now opened up by where I live now. And I was still living down where I lived before, in between the two places. So north of Portland, I lived in Lewiston. And then north of that is – I live in Gardner now, and Hollowell is where the comic shop is. And he opened, and I came went to check it out. He basically bought somebody's big collection to open the shop with and then, like, you know, went through and priced everything. But I got from him, I got a copy of Eternal Warrior 4 for a dollar. And a copy for $3. Plus, I got some [S2] Nice. [S1] Of the old Mario comics. I got a whole bunch of stuff. Some of the stuff he had priced appropriately, but some of the stuff he just didn't. Because until the Bloodshot movie rumors were first coming out, like when it was news, but the news was that basically that they wanted to make a movie and hadn't done anything yet. That comic didn't have any value. It wasn't until after the movie news, and then it spiked up like crazy, and then it plummeted back down after nothing happened for a long time. And it seems like it's kind of yo-yoed since then. I checked it out the other day. When I was working on buying my house, I liquidated everything pretty much. Like, the only stuff I kept was my Ninja Turtle comics at the time, and since then I've even pulled the plug on that and just switched over to either digital or getting trades or hardcovers of a few of my favorite things. Yeah, I'd gotten rid of all of those. Like, I traded those two Eternal Warrior 4s for a Ninja Turtle comic that a friend had that he didn't care about. So I was like, whatever, we'll just trade. Since then, a friend has hooked me up with a copy of Eternal Warrior 4 for a very cheap price. So that's one that it's going to stay in my collection now. But yeah, that's one of those books that whenever – I mean, it helps that it has a fantastic cover. But whenever I see that, that's like just one of those great finds that you just kind of get chills if you find it for, you know, not a rip-off price.
I mean, so I don't remember what I paid for it because it was at my LCS. And I traded a bunch of books in that I just was never going to read again. I don't remember what they were. And I had – I think it must have been about – $100 in trade credit, give or take. And I spent 50 that day and walked away with Eternal Warrior 4 and a bunch of other early Valiant books. I think the Unity story. I feel like I got it for a much cheaper price than it's going for now. And because I also helped him shift probably about 200 long boxes from one room to another for reasons, he gave me a copy of X-O-Manowar number one. Like, just, hey, you know, here's your payment kind of thing. And I was super happy about that. So I mean, you know, I don't know what it's going for. I never looked it up because I didn't want to be that guy. But I was just super happy to have it because I actually found them in his basement. He didn't know he had them. And I was like, hey, you know, what's the score of that? He's like, how many of those do I have down there? I was like, 7 or 8. He's like, oh, cool. So I think once I told him that, he comped me one for helping him move boxes, which was super cool of him.
That's awesome. That's one of the ones that I got rid of that I wish I had, but I was selling them, you know, like the entire runs. I built a whole collection, not all the variants or the, you know, the gold books or whatever. Yeah. But I built the entire run of VH1, which is, I forget the exact number, but it's 600 and something. And once I got it finished, and I was, you know, progressively trying to read through it, and I was reading through it in publication order too. So like I started with Magnus number one, and then as I went and other books added in, I would read them, you know, like as if they came out all the same month. So I'd, you know, read them together that way. After a while, I got tired of that. So then I started just trying to plug through series. Plus, I was like, we were getting serious about buying a house, so I wanted to start selling them. And I knew that they would sell as a run, really hard to sell individual issues, except for the key ones. So I started trying to pound through reading runs. Like, I read of all of Exo, all of Bloodshot, like, you know, some of the best ones. But then I just started hitting the wall. And I got to the point where I was like, I don't even want to finish reading these. And then I just couldn't even sell them fast enough. I was glad to sell them, get rid of them, and haven't looked back since then. But there was a lot of stuff I really liked. Archer and Armstrong was, I think, my favorite out of everything. But Exo was good. Bloodshot had some good stuff.
Yeah, I just picked up the first 25 issues of it, of Archer and Armstrong, the VH1 from a guy. I think I met him on the Valiant fans group. He lives locally, so I don't know if I met him there or one of the local groups, but he's been reading, he was selling them, and he's got the Fred Van Lente Archer and Armstrong run as well for me. Nice. But he hasn't read them yet, and I have through graphic policy. I just like to own them so I can actually read them not digitally.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, take your time, read them. I'm in no rush for them. I want you to read them and enjoy them because you obviously bought them to do that. I don't need it right away, but he did sell me a Solar number 10, first print in really good condition for a pretty reasonable price. So I was really happy about that when that came through.
That's awesome.
Nice. Ironically enough, about 4 days I found the second print in Toronto when I was there for the weekend, and then I got back and he's like, hey, I'm selling this, do you want it? I'm like, yeah. Never thought I'd find it anywhere. And then now, so I know I said earlier that I won't use eBay. I don't consider finding it in a Facebook sale the same thing, as it's usually an auction bit or an auction or a private sale that way. I'm not actively going out and searching for it. If I just happen to see it or someone offers it to me, like you hooked me up with God, Book of Death, I think, and a couple of other things too. So
yeah, I find random stuff. I haven't done that in a while, but for a while I was getting variants from my last LCS. Because I knew people that would want them. He didn't really have the market in his store for them. So I would sell his variants for him, and then he would give me a cut as store credits. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Then I traded a bunch of... When I was starting to break down my Ninja Turtle collection, I traded a bunch of the original Mirage run of Ninja Turtle stuff to a friend who had gotten kind of real into Valiant, but then kind of backed off. So he had a bunch of the hardcovers. So I was like, yeah, I'll take whatever hardcovers you have. Cause like I knew with those that I would enjoy them anyways if I didn't flip them. Mm-hmm. But I knew that there was a market for those and that some of them were really hard to find. So I ended up stumbling upon some of them, like the first Archer and Armstrong book. That was the one I posted up in just a group that I had that. I had like 5 or 6 people hit me up within minutes. So it's kind of whoever sent me the money first got the book.
That is funny.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then like I know I sent you a bunch of VH1 books that I got for next to nothing from my shop. Like I was going to buy some stuff for somebody. I was like, how much do you just want for all of this stuff? Because I knew he didn't want it there anymore. So he just gave me a price for everything. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Hit up anybody I thought might want. I'm like, these are cheap. Take them off my hands.
Yeah, I remember I got a bunch of stuff from you at once because shipping to where I live is awful. Yeah. So to ease that a bit, I think we got a bigger box and sent a bunch of stuff over. I actually just found those VH1 comics. Oh, I didn't know I had that. Conveniently enough, I hadn't actually rebought any of them, which I'm known for. I was going through my collection, and I've been going from long box to short box because I can see a time when my back's not going to be great or whatever down the road. Hopefully, knock on wood, 50 years down the road, probably less than that I won't be able to move them as easily. So if I can combine the short boxes now, I can go through and kind of prune a few things out. I found 3 copies of the same comic in different boxes. So that, must have felt familiar the first time I bought it, so I thought I'd buy it again. Or the second time I bought it, I guess. But whatever. Yeah, I found the Divinity Trilogy hardcover at a shop for cover price after it had gone out of print. So I picked that up there as well. But I feel weird because I haven't actually opened it yet. I got it because I find it's the best way to read the story is one big chunk, but I haven't actually broken the cellophane on it yet, and I will at some point, just not until I want to read it again.
Yeah, those hardcovers are nice too. The Valiant ones. Getting a nice hardcover is always really nice. There's a few that I've gotten rid of in my liquidation phases that I regret. A couple of them I'm actually working on trading back for too. One of the best things I've done though with Valiant, because obviously, like I said earlier, I didn't stop liking the comics or, turn my back on them or whatever, but like the passion wasn't there like it was anymore. And, I was still reading the digital preview copies and, then discussing the books and stuff like that. And I just got to the point where, I'd fall behind. I'd go a few months without reading any of them, and then I would read them all and catch up. Be like, this isn't too bad. And I did that. The last time I did that, I fell behind, and I started reading. And this was right around the time where, DMG totally bought them out, and, Dinesh was no longer part of the company. And, starting to see the stuff that was coming after that, and it was stuff I had looked forward to, but, I don't know if it's that that I could see a difference in quality or if just the whole picture of everything was making me not enjoy it as much at the time. But I just decided then I wasn't going to read it that way anymore. So I haven't kept up with it in a while. And what I'll do is eventually, just like I do with anything else, I'll wait till there's a Comixology sale and then I'll pick up a whole run of something that I want to read. And that's how I'll eventually, I had read some of Ninja K, but, that's just a good example because I like that one. Down the road a little bit, they'll have a sale. When that series wraps up, I'll just pick up the whole series and I'll read it all again. I'll be able to enjoy it a lot more because it won't be how it is reading a promotional PDF. For me, I would have it in Dropbox. I'd save it to my Dropbox, and I'd go on my tablet and open it up in that. But then reading it on Dropbox is annoying because you're scrolling vertically instead of side to side. And since you're not swiping side to side, it's not like turning a page. So it's like you have to get it in the right spot. And plus you get that water stamp in there. And plus if it decides to crash, then you have to start over at the beginning and scroll through half the thing and it loads up slow. So there's a lot of things that can be annoying about it, especially trying to read a whole bunch of comics like that. So I think that was putting a damper on it too.
Yeah, no, I totally feel your pain with digital copies and not digital copies, but the watermarks and reading them on I use a PDF reader, which is a little bit better, but I do it on my laptop, which can be a bit frustrating with Zoom. It always seems to be set to 150%. So you've got to kind of zoom out enough so that you can see. I like to see the page as I would in physical.
Mm-hmm.
Which is tough to capture that and be able to read everything on the screen that I have, but it is what it is. I actually still buy a lot of the Valiant comics anyway, even though I do get them I get the review copy. So I usually try, we get them, I think, Friday, maybe. So I usually try and read them, review them, get that ready for Wednesday. Sometimes I don't always do it. Life can get in the way. But I will still pick them up when I actually go into my LCS, because I want them to keep ordering the Valiant in. So, and if I'm one of the few people that get Valiant there and I'm not actually picking it up from them, then I feel like they're going to look at me strange if I'm trying to push it onto their customers and I'm not doing the same thing. But for the most part, there's not many comics I'll actually go out and pick up anymore. Old Man Logan is one for some reason. I am really enjoying that. But a lot of them are in Pestilence, which is by Aftershock.
Yeah, who writes that one?
Frank Thierry. And you can really tell it in the second miniseries, because I know from earlier podcasts you're not a huge fan of vulgarity if it doesn't serve the story. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't like the second series of Pestilence. I don't usually care about vulgarity, and like the violence doesn't bother me, the nudity doesn't bother me, but there's something about the second series of Pestilence, and I don't know if it's because he's trying to depict the world going to hell quite literally, and everything just, you know, the shit hitting the fan, excuse my French, the stuff hitting the fan and so on, or what, but it's just the language in it is almost bad enough that it will take you out of the comic, and for some people it probably will, depending on your tolerance for that stuff.
Yeah, you know, none of that stuff bothers me, just in the microcosm of it. I every once in a while come across something that's a great example of when it's just, it, like you said, it'll take you out of the comic. Like, profanity doesn't bother me at all. But when it's like they start to try to construct sentences and use as many swear words as they can and use them in different ways just to use them. Like, it just starts to, like, it takes you out of it when it's like, why do you need to construct a sentence with words that aren't meant to even be used that way, let alone, you know, profanity? A good example for me of a book that took it too far, and it's one that I tried to like, because, like we were talking about Sandman earlier, like, it's one of those books that you should like because it's great, is Preacher. And I had read the first trade some time ago, and that version of the trade was basically like two story arcs. And it was pretty good, but I didn't really feel the desire to go further. So I tried again, and by now the trade was different. It was actually three story arcs, and the third story was even crazier than the first two, and I actually really liked it. So I picked up the second trade, and right away, it's about a guy having sex with animals. And I was like, okay, out of this, don't need that anymore. And
I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, using swear words where they shouldn't be used doesn't, like, I mean, I'm English, and I find that we tend to do that a lot more for comedy than you would see over here. But for some reason, it feels unnatural when I'm reading it in comics, and I don't know if that's because I'm used to a certain tone, or there's a back and forth jibe when characters are doing it on the TV show, but that's missing when I'm reading most comics that do it here. And it takes out just enough that you're like, well, this isn't that bad. The art's still pretty cool. I'm just not enjoying it as much as I did the first series. So if you can find it cheap enough, I'd highly recommend picking up at least the first series. The second one, it kind of takes a dive off the deep end.
Yeah, I know that's one that I heard of, because a lot of the Nerdy Legion guys are big Aftershock fans, and I've tried different stuff, and some of it I like more, but I definitely have found just the general, like, you know, different publishers or different creators, you always kind of know either there's something that like you're going to be more likely to like them because it's that publisher, that creator, that whatever, or a little less likely. That's how Aftershock is with me. Like, I really enjoyed Animosity. I've really enjoyed a few other things. Actually, I have the first trade of Baby Teeth sitting in there to read. I read the first issue from the Free Comic Book Day issue, I think it was, and I enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to that. And so far, I've liked the other Donny Cates stuff. But then some of it, like Black Eyed Kids, everybody loved Black Eyed Kids. I've tried reading that twice, and I think it's so boring. Like, it just, it bores me to death, and I feel like the art in it is really lazy, too. But I don't know, just something about that one. Like, other guys have absolutely loved it, and for me, it just doesn't connect with me.
And I think that's the beauty of comics, is it is something that connects with me might not connect with you, and for entirely different reasons too, right? Like, one of my favorite Wolverine stories is Not Dead Yet, purely because it's probably the first one that I actually picked up not in reprint magazines.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first four or five issue. I think I got 17, 118 first, and then it starts in 119 through 124, 123. I don't know. But that was the first four-issue arc I ever picked up and absolutely loved it. Prior to that, in the UK, we had, I think they were published by Panini at the time. They were Marvel reprint mags. So for like a £1, like £2 to £2.25, you would get three comics every month, usually of the same character, but of different areas in the run, or maybe half a graphic novel and half of something else. So I read a lot of comics that way, which is also why I'm not great with numbering with early X-Men issues, because I don't know what issues I've read, because I don't know what issues they were in the comic. That being said, I did want to ask you, did you ever read The Paybacks by Elliot Rehal and Donny Cates, Jeff Short of the art?
I haven't, but that's actually one I've heard of, because I believe that they're republishing it either now or soon.
Yeah, I think they are. It is absolutely fantastic. The first series, I think, was done by Dark Horse, the first four or five issues. And the second one was published by Heavy Metal, I believe. it's fantastic. It is so good. I mean, you know what Cates and Rehal are capable of individually, but they just played off each other so well in The Paybacks. So if you're unfamiliar, it's not everyone's Bruce Wayne. Some people need, some superheroes need money from somewhere to finance their superhero career. And in this universe, they get a loan from the banker. And when they default on the loan, the paybacks have to go and, repossess their equipment, etc. In some cases, they'll actually repossess the hero, and the hero will be forced to work as a repo man until their debt's paid off. So all of the paybacks are failed heroes, which adds another level of brilliance to it.
That sounds pretty good. I'm looking up on Comixology right now. And they're having a Dark Horse sale, so this might be a really good time for me to check it out.
It's definitely a good time. I think Dark Horse did the first run, so it's definitely worth you checking that out if you can find that.
And it looks like they have, because I remember them talking about they were releasing, I believe, something that collected the entire series. And I can't tell if it's Dark Horse or not, but... Yeah, released August 14th, 2018, so this just came out not long ago. Yeah, sold by Dark Horse. So this looks like it's the Paybacks collection. It looks like it's the whole thing. Let me compare it to this other one. Yeah, it's twice as long as just Volume 1, so there we go.
Yeah, you should totally pick that up. It is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. We should probably wrap up in a few minutes here. I know it's pretty late where you are, and not far off where I am. I know one of the common things that we shared, you kind of mentioned him a moment ago, but we both have an affinity for Wolverine. For me, it really came about. I mean, of course, like, I always knew who Wolverine was, but I finally dug into the Uncanny X-Men, starting with, Giant Size in 94, and then going from there. And I've read some of Wolverine's solo series, like the four-issue series and then some random issues. But he's, like, between the X-Men and just him as a character, he's a character that I really like. So what got you so on Wolverine?
I think it was the X-Men animated series. It came out in the mid-ish 90s. It came out at a time when I was looking for something. You know, I don't even know why. I was trying to have a deep and profound reason why Wolverine resonated with me. I think it was just a clause. I was young enough that you know, a dude with metal coming out of his hands just looked awesome. Like, the visuals were fantastic. And so I always enjoyed Wolverine within the X-Men cartoon, and I loved the back and forth with Cyclops. Now, much older, I actually appreciate Cyclops a lot more. But at the time, it's the same reason I always liked Raphael, is that rebellious streak to the character.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up, Wolverine Unleashed number 8 was the first comic I ever picked up. It is one of the reprint mags I was talking to you about. I actually found it the other day in one of my long boxes. I thought I'd long got rid of it. And within that, there was, it was Wolverine 43, the second half of Wolverine Bloodlust, which is an Alan Davis book. And there was, oh, and the fourth issue of his first solo adventure. So it was a great snapshot into the character. It touched on his samurai side and the honor that code he tries to live by. The Bloodlust is a great book if you've never read it. It deals with the animal within and will he ever find peace. It's set within, I think, somewhere in the Yukon territories in Canada. And there are, you know, for lack of a better word, Bigfoot like things that are hunting and killing people, and he just happens to be there and tries to stop it, etc., etc. And then Wolverine 43 is, it remains one of my favorite stories, I think, because it was the first one I ever read. He's in the Central Park Zoo and finds a serial killer who just enjoys hurting and killing animals and people. And this, at this point, his target is an actual caged Wolverine, and Wolverine stops him and lets the Wolverine out, and just kind of, one of the last panels is you see the guy running away and the Wolverine chasing him. As a kid, that was hilarious and I loved it. As an adult, I'm like, man, I feel like that's dangerous, letting a Wolverine just run around Central Park. So, you know. But yeah, so I think that those three angles of his character has always been what attracted me to him, and it doesn't help that some of the artists that have been drawing him have been absolutely fantastic, and you can get some really good fight scenes between him and Sabretooth.
Mm-hmm.
Because of Wolverine, I've been really drawn to Maverick as well, and his 12 issue solo series from 98 and 99 is, I will still pull that out and read it every couple of years, because I really enjoy the man's dying from the legacy virus and just wants to retire and die quietly in peace, but he just can't get the rest he needs. And I like that, you know, how much can one guy go through sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, just like you, I was exposed to X-Men in the 90s from the cartoon. I wasn't reading comics then. My older cousin was huge into comics, and he had a ton. I remember looking at them as a kid and just having no desire to read comics. Like, to me, they were just awful, because it's like, why would I want to go through this much work reading, like trying to figure out the layout and everything, like when I could just read a book, and the words are all in order, and you get more story, and... the art didn't grab me then. It was also in the 90s, and like, I apparently just had good judgment in art as a kid, because there was a lot of god awful art in the 90s. I just, of course, wasn't finding the good stuff, because that wasn't what was popular and what my cousin was buying. But, I was exposed to the X-Men, and just growing up and, you know, just really getting into comic in the last like half a decade about, Marvel has always been easier for me, and I think it's because of that X-Men series and Spider-Man. You know, Spider-Man's always been super approachable, but like Spider-Man and the X-Men, I mean, the other stuff like Fantastic Four, Captain America, there wasn't really properties out aside from comics at that time that made them really easy to get into. So those, you know, Spider-Man and X-Men were always the first things to kind of appeal to me. But now having gone back and started reading the Claremont run from the beginning, and, you know, of course, Wolverine wasn't a new character in Giant Size, but Storm and Nightcrawler, and I know there were a couple other characters introduced in that. Cyclops, I think, was introduced mm-hmm. that too.
He was X-Men number one. I think it was Colossus and Thunderbird.
Colossus is what I meant to say, yeah, actually. So, yeah, Colossus was what I was thinking of. Cyclops, yeah, of course, he's from the beginning. And Thunderbird was dead shortly.
It's late, right? Your brain doesn't work when it's late.
They're both C names.
Close enough, really.
But Nightcrawler,
ends in an S.
Storm, and Wolverine are my three favorite X-Men of all times. And when I first cracked open, so I was reading this because I found these beat up old black and white paperback essential collections of the X-Men. That my shop was selling for $4 a book. And I mean, $4 for like 16 to 20 issues of comics, I think. So, something around there. And I had always wanted to read. Yeah, I'd always wanted to read these old X-Men. It didn't matter they were beat up and all that. So I got them and I started reading them. And man, it was hard to read at first. It really takes some work to get used to reading old comics when you never did. But once I got in the swing of it, one of the things that really stood out to me about Wolverine is at first he's just portrayed as kind of an animal, you know, I mean, he's base instinct and, but you know, like I liked the character cause I obviously knew more about his development after that. You know, I had read a lot of Wolverine comics that took place way after that point before I ever read this. And the other X-Men were just jerks to him. Like they were always jerks to him. And then you get to the issue where he finally puts them in their place with something, because they were just always bagging on him and insulting him and telling him to shut up. And, you know, I mean, they were awful to him. And, yeah, he was, you know, pretty blunt and to the point. But then something happened, and I can't remember what issue it is. I'll have to go back and reread these, even though I'm, like, still hundreds of issues away from reading what I want to read for the first time. But something happens, and Storm is just like, oh my gosh, I never knew. And he's just like, yeah, you know, maybe you should stop judging other people. And, you know, like, just whatever it was just finally that moment where he's like, yeah, you don't know anything about me, so maybe you should quit trying to know something about me. And that was the point where the character of Wolverine really started developing, and there was a lot more nuance to him. He wasn't just some brute with claws.
Originally the claws were in his gloves, eh? Mm-hmm. It wasn't until like I think 98 or X-Men 98 or 112 or 116 where the gloves weren't on him when the claws came out. I don't remember which issue it was because I've been trying to pick up key issues to do with Wolverine. Like I'm never going to be able to afford an entire early X-Men run. I think that's, you know, far and away beyond me. But grabbing the odd issues, like the one where he fights the Hellfire Club alone, like mm-hmm. those kind of things, I'm enjoying picking up here and there whenever I find them.
Yeah, just the development of Wolverine, Storm too. Storm, I think in the stuff that I read that came much later, she seemed like a very flat character. And going back to read the original creation of Storm and the run after that, there was so much more, like her character was so much more dynamic than it is nowadays. I don't know about more recent stuff. I haven't been keeping up with what's been going on, but I'm excited about the Uncanny X-Men series that's starting up soon. Even if it's not the greatest thing in the world compared to the old stuff, you know, it's nice that they have all these X-Men series, but just have one called Uncanny X-Men. Okay, it gives me something to dive into.
Yeah, same. So I'm terrible, and my podcast host buddy, he always laughs at me because I never know what's going on because I don't read previews because I hate spoilers that much that I won't even touch the solicitations or previews for fear of spoiling what's in an issue.
I mean, neither.
I'm trying to get beyond that because I don't actually know what's coming out until I'm at the comic shop, which isn't really ideal for someone that writes for a comic book website.
Yeah, I think I just heard about Uncanny from... I don't even know why I heard about it, but I heard it was coming out, so I just asked my shop about it, and he said, yep. And I said, okay, I want to start getting that. I think it's going to come out. I want to say it's going to come out as a weekly series for the initial launch.
The first 10 weeks, right? I think.
Yeah. So I'm honestly not the craziest about that because that costs more money. But
yeah, I think it. Once I found that out, I think it interests me less, and I'm probably going to wait to get it in trade. Although, funny thing, I recently did an analysis of is, you know, at what point do trades actually start saving you money? And it's not as much as money savings as you would think going trade versus going floppy issues if you're getting them right away.
Yeah, and one key with trades too is purchasing them in a way where you get them at a discount, which I don't know how much availability you have to that, because a lot of the places that I would order from, you'd be paying a, you know, crap load for shipping, so it wouldn't help you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's probably much easier in the US than it is up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how easy it would be if I was still in the UK, but yeah, it can be pretty difficult to get them at a value. Now, I have been able to pick up a lot of the Valiant Deluxes through Amazon for about half price, amazingly enough.
Wow.
So that's been fat. Like, I got, I've just picked up the fifth Exo from a shop, but before that I was paying, between $25 to $30 for them, which may not sound like a huge savings to you, but when they're, because I think they're $39 in the States.
I think so, yeah.
So up here they're closer to $55.
Mm-hmm.
Like after the exchange, which is fine, I guess, but makes sense, right? But yeah, so if you can find stuff on sale, it's well worth it. But then you can also use the same argument for dollar bins too. So it's how much patience. It all comes down to patience, I think, with comic reading. If you don't have the patience to wait, then you're not spending that much more to get floppies if you get it right away.
Exactly. Yeah. Here's my take on how I spend money on comics. Because first of all, my budget is very limited right now. But even as it expands. If it's just stuff I want to read, I try to make a lot of use of digital, especially like Hoopla is a service that, I'm able to get a certain amount of downloads a month for free, and it's through your library if your library offers it. So mine started at 5 downloads a month. It went up to 10, which I couldn't even keep up with. It's dropped down to 3, which I don't even mind because now I know I can selectively use those 3 and try stuff out. Without it like being overwhelming. there's other stuff too. Like I have Marvel Unlimited, which is great for reading all the old Uncanny X-Men and stuff. That's actually why I got it, because it's not easy to find all that stuff. You can't just go find all of the old Uncanny X-Men in trades.
Is it on? It's not on Marvel Unlimited, eh? I haven't looked on there in forever.
What isn't on Marvel Unlimited?
Sorry, the Uncanny X-Men stuff? Is it the early stuff? Is it not on?
Oh, yeah, it's all on there. That's why I got a Marvel Unlimited. So, I've been working on reading through that stuff using that because you can't just go out and buy trades of all the old Uncanny stuff. There's huge gaps. They don't just have, like, a rolling collection or anything. Anything that I get in floppy, I want to get something that when I go and get it from the shop, I'm excited to get it and I want to read it right away. Doesn't have to be the best thing, just something that I'm excited to get. So like one thing I've been getting has been Venom, because it's just fun to read Venom.
I've heard that's been really good. I'm behind on that. I have them. I just haven't gotten a chance to read them yet.
Did you read Thor: God of Thunder by Jason Aaron?
Yes, I love that.
Okay, read Venom.
Yeah, I read the first issue, I think.
Read through issue 4.
I think I have. I have that on my desktop, so I should.
Issue 4. Catch up. You're gonna be real happy if you read Thor: God of Thunder and you loved it. You are gonna be real happy when you get to issue 4.
All right, I'll dig that out and plow through that tomorrow and let you know.
You'll appreciate it.
Did you read Venom?
No. I saw that coming out. No, I didn't read that. I've heard it's good.
It's, I mean, I'm a Wolverine fan, and minor spoilers in that, you know, Wolverine is in it. But it's worth reading if you're into Venom, and I assume it ties into what Donny Cates is doing with the main series. Again, I wouldn't know because I'm behind, but yeah, it's worth checking out if you can either get it on Comixology or wherever.
Oh, you just sold me on Wolverine, isn't it? I'm not a huge Venom fan, and I just picked it up because I had read the first one with like a digital preview, and I was really impressed with Ryan Stegman's art. Like, it was just like, this is a comic that just is fun to read because it's one of those you read, you're like, that's awesome, you know?
Did you read the run of Wolverine after he lost his healing factor? I don't remember who wrote it, but I think Ryan Stegman did art for a lot of it.
No, I got to read that. The only Wolverine that I've read more recently was I did read the Death of Wolverine story.
Yeah. I think it might be Wolverine Volume 5. I don't know. They did their stupid renumbering thing where they had 12 issues out and then the writer changed and then they relaunched it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where it's fine if you want to get the sales boost, but it also makes an ideal jumping off point for people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that was around the time that Chip Zdarsky was writing Howard the Duck, and we had two Howard the Duck number ones in the same year, and they both look so on top of that, they both look really similar too. I think it's a hilarious choice because they look so similar. It's basically Howard in an office, and in one he's at the front door, and in the other he's got his people around him. And I met Chip fairly recently, and I asked him to sign the two, and he agreed in that it was funny, but also mentioned that maybe it wasn't the best idea because they were so similar and they came out so close together that some people may have thought it was the same issue.
That's hilarious. At that, I think we'll go ahead and call it because I'm starting to get real tired and it's getting late and it's real late for you.
I've got to get up early too.
I don't. I'm off tomorrow. That's why we're doing this. I actually do have to get up early. It's my son's first soccer game. He's 6 years old. He's playing soccer. It's going to be fun. Why don't you share with everybody where they could find you on Twitter and find your podcast and your writing?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Carcossa. It's K-A-R-C-O-S-S-A. You can also find a lot of my writing at graphicpolicy.com. The podcast is hosted by Graphic Policy. It's called Those Two Geeks. I'd give the Twitter handle we have for that, but we're so bad at using it, it's just not worth touching at the moment. So you can find that at graphicpolicy.com. I believe if you just Google Those Two Geeks, it's there. It's not on iTunes yet. We never quite got around to setting that up, but it is on SoundCloud.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter as always at Who's Paul. You can tweet the podcast at STW. Sorry, I screwed up my own podcast. At occasionally STW. You can find this podcast and all the others on nerdylegion.com, including the ones I mentioned, like Comic Talk Today, which is Martin's fantastic podcast that he just had a great interview with Dinesh on there. If you didn't see that, you should check that out.
No, it is a really good listen. I would highly recommend you checking that out.
I should probably listen to it too.
I was just saying you as in your audience, but yeah, if you haven't listened to it, you really should listen to it.
Yeah, that's one I should listen to. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. Everybody, I'll ask somebody what they think about some. Well, I talked about it on my podcast. I'm not going to listen to your podcast. I listen to like one or two podcasts at a time. That's it. But I do want to listen to that one. And I've listened to a few episodes of Martin's done. He does a great job.
He does a great job. It's just so prolific. I can't keep up with him. So I cherry pick what I listen to. But the Dinesh one is one I had to get to.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good – I can't wait to hear it. It's going to be a good one. So that's where you can find us. I hope you guys are enjoying these fill-in episodes. Sparky and I are aiming to do this every other week with our schedules. That's kind of what works. So we're just trying to have some more content, give you guys something to listen to in the off weeks. So we'll see what the future brings with these off-week episodes. But thank you for joining me, Alex. We've been talking online forever. I think that's going to be one of my goals with this, is to finally get all the people that I've talk to through text to talk verbally and, you know, get to know people a little better, I guess. Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, it's been great talking to you. And I said earlier, it's weird talking to you and hearing you respond to what I'm saying versus just listening to you as I'm walking or working or whatever. So it's been a bit weird and yet kind of cool at the same time.
I remember what it was like when I was first doing the podcast and talking to people that you didn't expect to talk to, or occasionally, the first couple of people we had on in our first like handful of episodes, we had, Sean from Only the Valiant. So I had listened to him a whole bunch. We had Josh who was doing, what was it called? His podcast was awesome.
Get Valiant?
No, different no, Josh. Josh Eves, he was doing, oh man, I'm totally going to blank on it now. I can't remember the name of his podcast, but he was doing a podcast where he was reading through trade by trade with a friend of his who had never read Valiant and wasn't a comic reader. They would read the trade and then they would discuss it. And it was going through trade by trade as the trades were released from everything. It was a fantastic way to listen to Valiant, whether if you were somebody who had never read, getting exposed to something new. If you had already read it, getting like the recap, but then also getting the discussion between somebody who was a big longtime Valiant fan and somebody who was just totally green on everything.
Yeah. So I know you've talked about it and I've heard about it and I've looked for it and I don't remember the name either.
Yeah, I'll have to double check on the name. It's just one of those things I'm spacing on right now. But it was one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. So it was just interesting, like our first handful of episodes and we had a couple people on like that we had listened to so much. I was scared to death. The first interview we did was Tom Fowler, especially when you see him on Twitter, like he, you know, seems like somebody that may be a little less approachable, you know, just with his personality, but he was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, pleasure talking to you. It's great to get to hear your voice now that you've heard mine all these years. Yeah. So have a good night to all of you. Until next time.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boo.
Nerdy Legion.
Nerdylegion.com.